Today's guest is the world-leading researcher in the world of tart cherry juice and beetroot juice when it comes to athletic recovery. Tom has a bachelor's in sports and exercise science and a master's in sports performance. He also has a doctorate in exercise health nutrition. He's worked with several elite sports teams, including the Newcastle Falcons rugby team. Our conversation today sheds some light on the truths, the myths, and the theories behind tart cherry juice and beetroot juice when it comes to athletic performance and recovery. Let's get into it.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery podcast.
Hey, Tom, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Jace. How nice to see you.
So there was a brief intro on your kind of background and stuff, but if we just run down your education, you have a bachelor's degree in sport and exercise science, then a master's degree in sport performance from the University of Portsmouth. And if I'm correct in saying you also were a boxer and a football, is that American football or is that soccer that you were playing at University of Brighton?
Oh wow, where have you dug this out from? So in my undergraduate in sports science, mm-hmm. I've always been football or soccer, so yeah, not American, okay. So soccer, that was always my main sport. I did try and take up boxing. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Wasn't very good, but it was really good fun. But that was, yeah, I stuck mainly to soccer when I realized the new boxing.
Yeah, sweet. You play all 3 or 4 years that you were there?
Yeah, so we do 3 years. So the first year, I still played for my home club. Okay. So I used to travel back, and then I decided to play for the university team for the second.
Cool. After university, did you play any more club, or do you currently do any of that kind of stuff now?
Yeah, so not so much. So I carried on playing for a few more years, and then I started to move around a lot for work, and I decided to bring back kind of my Saturday afternoons and my, you know, sure. Tuesday Thursday evenings instead of training. So I stopped playing other than, you know, kind of local five-a-side and things like that. And now I'm more of a runner, a very, very distinctly average runner. You know, there's a few races a year to keep me motivated.
Nice.
But yeah, so I don't really play soccer anymore.
Okay. Running like long distance or?
Yeah, attempting. No, so I've done a few 10Ks and half marathons. So I normally try and do 2 or 3 each year. So yeah, that's probably my main exercise. But yeah, like I said, I'm no athlete when it comes to
sport. For sure. So your master's degree in sport performance, what does that all entail? Because I don't know if we have that specific title in the States here.
Yeah, good question. I mean, I know in the States, a lot of sports science as well is called kinesiology, isn't it? Mm, so it's, yeah. I think they're basically the same. It's just kind of, you know, different wordings. But the sports performance degree, was very much, I suppose, like sports science would be. It still contained the main part. So it still had physiology, biomechanics, and psychology. Okay. It was just all of the kind of teaching was really aimed at sports performance. So I don't know what it's like in the States, but in the UK, when you do a sports science degree, you can do more clinical kind of physiology, clinical psychology work. But the master itself was very sports focused. And then as it went on, you got to choose dissertations and bigger projects. And that's when I probably did a lot more nutrition work.
Okay. So then that's when you got into the nutrition realm. I believe you got a doctorate as well from Northumbria University. And then you started working with like rugby teams, soccer, football teams. And if I'm not mistaken, Paralympic swimming teams as well?
So this was, 6 years ago now, I did my doctorate. So I finished it in 2017, Northumbria. So it's a university right in the north of the UK. And it was actually just after I finished my doctorate, I got a job at Newcastle University, which is literally just across the road from me.
Okay.
We got a 3-year partnership with the Newcastle Falcons Rugby Club. So we had a PhD student studying there. And then as part of the package, I would help with their nutrition. And then, in terms of my applied work, I've worked with some Premier League soccer clubs, and a lot of that's actually more research focused. But my work with rugby, and you mentioned Paralympic swimming, it is very much consultancy based. So I've never worked full or kind of part time on a regular basis for any teams or clubs. It's mostly all just consultancy work, which, again, it is quite common in the UK. We still have a lot of, I say, sports teams, even at the top level, that don't employ any type of nutritionist at all. I don't know if that's similar in the US, but I know here that they sometimes have, say, a sports scientist end up having to try and be an all rounder. And I think part of the problem is still that sports nutrition is not, say, a legally protected title here in the UK. Mm. So a lot of people can get away with it. So there's a lot of clubs that will have, say, consultants help them with specific areas. But there's still quite a few who don't actually employ part or full time at all.
Okay. So what's kind of the reason they bring in someone like you? What are you trying to help them with?
Yeah, absolutely. So the stuff that I did with swimming was around cooking and meal preparation for athletes. So quite a big part of the organization who look after Olympic Athlete UK, which is sport, is to do work on things like cooking skills and training camps and things like that. Try and obviously develop athletes to be quite independent. So that's some of the work I did with rugby. A lot more of the work was with the academy. So it was trying to, I suppose, educate them really on good nutrition. I mean, we're trying to capture them when they're between 14 to 18 years old. So, you know, they get good habits when they actually turn professional, fingers crossed they do. So that's a lot of workshops, again, a lot of cooking class and things.
Okay.
A lot of just one-on-one consultations, making small programs for the athletes as well.
Sure.
So various things like that.
So it sounds like on that end, you're trying to develop habits more with the nutrition rather than specific, eat this after a workout or that. But overall, how do you set up your meals for that? What were some of the challenges of people not being able to get into a habit that was healthy for them?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think that's one of the trickiest bits. I think most people in rugby are pretty good. They kind of have a good idea about nutrition generally. Mm-hmm. I find that a lot of individuals struggle with breakfast, particularly in rugby. They struggle to, when they're younger, they often struggle to put on the body mass required to be a professional rugby player. It's quite difficult to get to 90 to 100 kilos when you're 15, 16, but the way the game's going, it's very much possibly even required to get to that elite level. So I found that around school and the academy, that's probably one of the biggest challenges when they're trying to get sufficient breakfast, sufficient foods, and the right healthy foods to have actually during school as well. I found that probably the most difficult. And also, particularly in that age group, a lot of their foods are made by their parents or their carers.
Yeah.
So it's quite hard to get them to be independent, and you have to really kind of get the parents involved in what you're trying to sell. So we would do nights where we'd do presentations where it would be the players, but also the parents, so we could try and get some of the messages across.
Yeah.
Because they need to buy into it as well if they're doing the shopping and most of the cooking. So in the academy, I find that probably the most challenging.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I know what you mean by you need the buy-in from the parents or the people that are providing the food too, because I in high school, so that, 12 to 16 and kind of age, I took the my nutrition into my own hands for a while at my own home. And so I cut out like a lot of processed stuff, all sugars, no candy, anything like that. But the temptations were always there because my family still, ate that. And that was hard. Like that was really hard. I felt myself, you know, slipping up a lot of times, and I had to just set hard, fast rules and to like, okay, not even a little bit, because if I get a little bit, I get more. Were you able to like work with the parents directly, or did you have to like help your athletes communicate with the parents? And how, if there was an athlete that said, hey, I want to, you know, do this, how should I communicate with my parents to make this happen?
Yeah, good question. So yeah, I didn't do too much directly with the parents other than when we had kind of group workshops. I think we wanted to try and, I suppose, teach the players themselves to have that autonomy. Mm-hmm. So I did want to try and encourage them to actually, yes, their parents can cook for them, but can they cook for themselves? And I think that's something that's really important. So trying to get them to do that, even if their parents are cooking, you know, things like weekends, etc. Okay. We did try and encourage that quite a lot. And we did do cooking camps and things like that, where they would go away and practice making snacks and different things like that.
Yeah.
But I suppose in terms of an athlete and a parent communication, I always found that the parents are generally on board. I don't think there's probably too much friction there. So I think that for athletes or, you know, academy individuals coming up, we want to make sure they get their nutrition and they want to optimize it as best they can. Then, like with most things, it's just being really open in terms of your communication. So whoever, you know, is in charge maybe of the products that you're consuming, then it's just being honest about the types of food you want, but also learning about what you need and then actually getting in the kitchen and doing that yourself. I think that's a really nice way. And I think that if you maybe come from a background with, you know, parents or carers who aren't into their nutrition much and don't necessarily, or the types of food that they make aren't really congruent with your goals or perhaps what a nutritionist is telling you, then I think that's a really good opportunity for you then to have discussions with your parents. And I mean, particularly as you get, you know, 14, 15, 16 and older like that, I think these conversations are really beneficial to have. And perhaps you can be the one to start to educate them and start to take the lead a little bit when you're actually, when it comes to, say, cooking meals for the family, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been my experience. Sometimes it's just as simple as having that conversation, although it might be like intimidating because of the power, you know, hierarchy or whatever. Yeah. But just, you know, having that real conversation with that. Sure. So, that's great. The topics today I want to discuss specifically with you, because I know there's been a lot of research in the past and some couple hot topics is tart cherry juice and beetroot juice and how that affects recovery and performance and stuff. And I know, Tom, you've been kind of on the forefront of a lot of that research and dug into that a lot. So I want to start with tart cherry juice. I've actually tried this myself, so I'm curious to know if there's actually any benefits to it. But before we get into the actual, like, research and what it actually does, I want you to help explain what the hypothesis is. Why would tart cherry juice be such a hot topic, and what is it supposed to do in the body?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what's actually useful and probably relevant both to the tart cherry juice and the beetroot juice is to probably say what we mean by kind of saying muscle damage and recovery. And then it will help you understand kind of the mechanisms by how it might work. But I suppose the way recovery works in terms of what the context these products might work. Yeah. We're thinking about recovery from what we would call muscle damage, which sounds quite bad. And it sounds like something that you want to avoid. But that's just the term. I mean, when we do any kind of exercise, we do damage our muscles slightly and they do repair and grow. So it's not necessarily something that's a negative, but what we're specifically talking about here is damage that elicits some kind of reaction. So the main symptoms that we get from strenuous exercise, and these can last for several days, tend to be an increase in muscle soreness or delayed onset of muscle soreness DOMS, which most people know. And even if you're somebody who goes to the gym quite infrequently, you'll know a lot about what DOMS is. And even, you know, right at the elite athlete level, we're with Premier League players, soccer players, we've worked with various other sports, and people report being sore even at the elite level. So that's one aspect you want to try and recover from, because that can be quite a problem when you're trying to train every day. And then the other big major issue is often a decrement in muscle function. So your ability to produce force, your ability to use power, and we typically measure this by, say, jumping, sprinting, things like that. So all of these activities take a while to recover when you're suffering from muscle damage. So these are the two things that we really want to try and modulate in some way. So we want to try and get that muscle function back to pre-exercise levels as quickly as possible. And the same with muscle soreness, we want to try and dampen it. Now, what normally accompanies these two symptoms, inflammation and the production of free radicals, which is also linked to inflammation. Now, a lot of the research in terms of the causes of muscle soreness and the cause of the decrement suggests that inflammation and free radicals might exacerbate them, or they're at least hindering the recovery process. So the whole point when it comes to polyphenol-rich drinks like tart cherry juice is to try and focus on this inflammation and free radical aspect. Okay. So tart cherry juice is trying to target those main areas. And it does this, at least presumably this is our best understanding, by some of the polyphenols it contains. So tart cherry juice is particularly rich in some polyphenols called anthocyanins. Okay. And these are just small chemical compounds. Now, when we consume them, what we presume is that these anthocyanins, because they've been shown in studies to do this, are anti-inflammatory, so they dampen this inflammatory response. And they're also antioxidant, which again, we assume is reducing this buildup of free radicals. So if we can reduce both of these, then potentially we can enhance that recovery process. So we can feel less sore, and then perhaps we can jump higher a few days afterwards when we're suffering from muscle.
Okay. Yeah. So in theory, you damage your muscles after a hard workout by, and you get the effects by soreness and then lack of, like, I could bench 180 today, but only 160 tomorrow. The idea is inflammation's free radicals. That's what's causing that lack of performance and the soreness. And then through these different chemicals in tart cherry juice, that's supposed to reduce those two things and help with that. Okay. So what is the research actually showing with that? Is that hold true through research, or are you finding something else?
Yeah. So it depends. So a lot of the early research in cherry juice, which was probably about a decade ago, it really started. And it was actually my PhD supervisor, Professor Glyn Howardson, did a lot of it. And, they showed quite consistently that cherry juice can improve recovery. And they first showed this after a marathon race.
Okay.
Now, as you can imagine, after a marathon, a lot of individuals, you know, even if you are well trained, you can be sore for the next few days and you can have big inflammation, et cetera. So they found that when you consume these cherries, it reduced inflammation. It also helped restore, essentially their muscle function restored quicker after the exercise. And then they showed the same with cycling exercise as well. So it was about 2 hour long, very high intensity sessions, which again,
with the cycling. Soreness.
Yes, cycling. Okay. Yeah. So this can cause soreness, decrements in muscle function as well. And again, cherry juice was shown to reduce inflammation and help restore function. And they showed it in various different models. So in intermittent sports too. And then other researchers also supported that.
Okay.
But then I suppose on the other hand, in more recent years, some of the work I've done and some that others have done have not quite seen these effects. And the problem at the moment in the problem with a lot of sports nutrition research generally, and we have to make inferences about, is that a lot of this work that Professor Howardson was doing and others is in what the participants are, say, sub-elite athletes or recreationally active is what we normally describe them.
Sure.
In research. And this means that some of them can be pretty good. You know, they're training quite regularly. They're not unfit individuals, but they're not elite athletes. And elite athletes are very different. They're, you know, almost freakishly different because they're so well adapted and well trained. So a couple of the studies that I've done in cherry juice with elite soccer players and elite rugby players, we weren't able to see the same effects that were shown in a lab setting. And a few others have also shown that as too. There's a study, and I believe it's in kayaking, again, elite level kayakers, where they couldn't show these recovery benefits. Okay. So,
and do you know how long of about the kayaking was? Was it up to that like 2 hour mark, like the marathon, or is it shorter?
No, it wasn't. And again, I think that's probably the biggest context of this. You've got, on the one hand, that elite level athletes might not get the same benefits as sub-elite athletes. And linked to that, the main reason is probably going to be the extent of muscle damage they experience. So I think with these drinks and these recovery beverages, they're probably only going to be beneficial if you experience quite severe symptoms. And sub-elite athletes will experience more severe symptoms. But then also, if you do, say, 2 hours of cycling compared to, say, a 1K kayak or something shorter than that, again, you're probably going to experience greater symptoms. So I think the research, if you look at it closely in the pattern, the more damage there is and the less elite you are in terms of athletic status, the more beneficial this is going to be for you.
Okay. So maybe like, probably those teenage years that haven't quite hit, college or university age, they're not training at that extreme high level, but if they have maybe a very intense race or something, you would expect, based on the research, that would help those types of athletes?
Yeah, I would suggest so. And I think that the other things to consider, I suppose, is anyone who does kind of novel exercise. So if you're an athlete who is doing something new and it leaves you quite sore and damaged, so you've got a new program perhaps it's pre-season, you're starting new types of exercise and your muscles are still trying to recover. All of these could be aspects when cherry juice might help. And then I suppose the biggest one is the kind of tournament scenario. So particularly in team sports who might have to recover pretty quickly, so they might only have 1, 2, 3 days between competitions. Then again, if you can use cherry juice, and even if it just has minimal effects, then it could be beneficial in these scenarios as well.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're playing games back to back, days or multiple in one day, from my research on this topic, preparing for this conversation, that's kind of how I found too. But there is maybe a little debate, and maybe you can clear some of this up, on when to take that. So say I have a tournament, on a weekend, do I start taking cherry juice that weekend? How much prior to, afterwards? How would I prepare for something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there's a general pattern that suggests if you have it for a few days before, it might be more beneficial. So for example, let's say you had something on a Sunday morning. If you were to take it 4 or 5 days before, so start taking it morning and evening on a Wednesday and for the rest of the days. And then once you've performed that competition on Sunday, if you keep taking it for a couple of days more, it's supposedly going to be more beneficial than if you were just to take it, say, the morning of the event and then the next couple of days. So it's this whole kind of preloading. And really, there isn't much research or any that is directly compared whether a preload versus just having it on the day and afterwards does have differential effects. It just seems that a lot of the studies that use the preload have resulted in more benefits. And I think the reasons for why this is aren't entirely clear at the moment.
Okay. So just the research has been saying, hey, we've been testing preload, but they haven't like said, well, we don't know if you'd have the same effects if you just did it that day.
That would be my interpretation. And I think the preload, the main rationale is that there's a hope that when you consume cherry juice and these anthocyanins that have these biological effects, is that there might be some kind of tissue accumulation. So therefore it's stored and you can use it when you need it. Or it might actually evoke some kind of adaptations. Polyphenols do have different adaptations, or potentially anyway. Again, that would be the theory, but it's probably not backed up by science and
human. Okay. So what about I don't know if this has any validity to it, but I've seen some studies testing like anti-inflammatories, like ibuprofen, Tylenol, over-the-counter type of drugs that might inhibit muscle growth or muscle adaptation after a strenuous workout, implying that maybe the inflammation free radicals are needed for the muscle growth instead of inhibiting it. Has there been any research with like tart cherry juice, if you're taking it through your hard workouts, that there might be less muscle growth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good question. And The honest answer is there hasn't been any specifically with cherries at all. There's been some with other polyphenols, and I've just been doing some work on this.
Okay.
Generally, the results are inconclusive, so it doesn't seem to necessarily benefit long-term adaptations or blunt adaptations on things like muscle growth, aerobic capacity. Now, the theory, again, is that if you consume these anthocyanins and cherry juice, then they're going to scavenge these free radicals. They're going to dampen inflammatory pathways a little bit like NSAIDs would, so non-steroid anti-inflammatory.
Okay.
But I suppose the issue really is, if you look at the chemistry, they work quite differently. So there's been a bit of a shift in thinking now with polyphenols like anthocyanins, that when we consume them, our gut will actually destroy most of them. So
when probably you say only consume the cherries or the...
Sorry, yeah, the cherries. So when we consume the cherries, most of the nutrients inside it that might have these antioxidants, inflammatory effects, are actually destroyed by the gut. Okay. So we probably only get maybe 0.2% of the goodness in this cherry juice into our body. Now, because that's such a small amount, it's very unlikely that they're going to directly reduce inflammation and have antioxidant effects like something like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. So the difference is probably that. Again, okay. This is the theorizing. There's really good kind of cell research, animal research to support this, is that these polyphenols and cherries, various other products like it, actually upregulate our endogenous system that helps us fight antioxidants and helps us fight in. So obviously our body has its own program response to these.
Yeah.
And the theory is at the moment that this is how they work. Now, if that's the case, they should actually have divergent effects to something like NSAID.
Okay.
But the issue at the moment is, again, the research hasn't quite caught up with that. So this is all a theory at the moment.
Okay. So if I'm understanding right, the theory is basically the cherry juice helps your body naturally fight kind of inflammation, whereas the anti-inflammatory over-the-counter drugs is more of like I'm blunting at the source in the cell.
Yeah. I think the drugs, like you say, they're trying to blunt. I mean, specifically ibuprofen, for example, things like that, they would target the cyclooxygenase pathway. So they blunt a specific signaling pathway.
Okay.
Whereas what we're thinking with polyphenols is that they're not necessarily blunting these pathways. They're actually having effects. So they're signaling other pathways that help our body respond to these.
Got it.
So the endogenous kind of antioxidant system we already have, the cellular defense systems we already have to try and combat inflammation, combat free radicals, we think that actually the cherries, so these anthocyanins, are going to be augmenting us.
Okay, cool. So basically, last thing on tart cherry juice before we get to beetroot juice. In your experience, I know you said like novel exercises is probably best. Is there any other type of sport that you would say might have greater effects than like, you know, endurance or speed or contact sports?
Yeah. I mean, I would actually probably look at it from a sports. I think it could probably benefit all of them depending on the exercise and what your symptoms are like. And I think if you're an athlete who maybe feels that you don't recover as well as you should, maybe whatever you're doing, sometimes you feel more sore after that specific workout or you feel more tired after another workout, I think that you might be an individual who could benefit from it. And I think that's a good way to look at it. Instead of looking maybe at the sports, is to think about the workouts you're doing, and also perhaps the time of the season as well. Because another thing that's always important to remember about research is that you'll often have, say, 10 individuals in a study. And what we're talking about when we say it works or it doesn't work is the mean or the average effect of that group, which probably means for 3 people it didn't work, but for 7 it did. So it's also highly individual. So I would say that if you're someone who feels you don't recover as quick as you can, whatever your sport is, then it's definitely worth a try to see if it might actually help.
Okay. And just to get this clear too, if it's not likely that there'd be any negative effects of tart cherry juice if you were to take it just to say, well, it might or might not work for me, but I'm going to take it just in case. There's probably no negative effects. correct?
From what that's the thing. Yeah, at the moment, I can't see any negative effects. There's no research that I know of to suggest any negative effects.
Okay.
So yeah, I wouldn't have thought so.
Okay. Cool. So there you have it for the tart cherry juice. Let's move on to the beetroot juice. I know there's been a lot of claims, especially in my world, the endurance running in beetroot as far as just performance having it. So again, let's get into assuming we keep the same, you know, as far as recovering muscle damage as free radicals, inflammation, and then lack of contraction. How should beetroot juice affect? Is it different or is it the same?
Probably the same, but then the other unique bit about beetroot juice is that it contains nitrate as well. Okay. I suppose before I get onto the nitrate aspect of beetroot juice, the reason, so I did my PhD in beetroot juice and recovery, so that was kind of the main part of my thesis. And the argument I was always trying to make was that beetroot actually contains, so everyone knew it from the endurance world, that it contains nitrate, but actually it also contains betalains and various other polyphenols, which have been shown to have biological effects similar to those anthocyanins that I mentioned from cherry juice.
Okay.
So the argument we had was always that we're investigating essentially a drink that could be similar to tart cherries and should work by the same mechanisms in terms of recovery anyway. But then the nitrate in beetroot complicates things.
Sure.
So actually, if anything, you should look at beetroot from a recovery standpoint and say, well, great, it's got these nutrients that might have antioxidants and anti-inflammatory effects. And then it's also got the nitrate as well. And the good thing about nitrate is when I mentioned about when you consume cherry juice, a lot of the goodness is kind of destroyed in the gut. So only a small percentage gets through. Yeah. Nitrate is almost 100% bioavailable. So once you consume it, you can almost guarantee that it's going to increase.
Yeah.
And when so you, if you say, look at the research.
When you say bioavailable, you mean your body uptakes it 100% rather
than just... So bioavailability is essentially the amount of that nutrient that appears in the circulation for cells to use. Okay. Yeah. So with nitrate, the good thing is that it will get into the system. So it will get into your body, you know it will. So therefore, it's got better potential for having some kind of biological effects.
Yeah.
But yeah, from a recovery standpoint, it's probably very similar to what we said with cherries. Because again, the only difference with nitrate that it might have on recovery is that nitrate might increase blood flow. Now, whether enhancing blood flow can enhance recovery is again a little bit of a tricky one, and we're not too sure about. No one's really looked into loads of detail about that.
Okay.
But that's one way that I think beetroot juice could be more beneficial than other supplements like tart cherries, because it does contain nitrate, which is gets into the system and also has additional effect.
Okay. Okay. And then as far as the what the research is showing from what you've done with that, is it pretty similar with tart cherry juice as far as recovery, or is there something different in the research that you're seeing?
Yeah, well, it was quite a pattern really emerged in my PhD. The same again, where the more kind of damaged you are and the more soreness, et cetera, you experience, the more beneficial it seems to be. We never did any work with elite athletes. So we didn't find any, or we haven't looked into that to find any, differences, but we did do some work with individuals who were untrained and it worked really well for their recovery. So these are people who did exercise that they'd never done before. They didn't exercise that much generally.
Okay.
But when we looked at for recovery after a marathon, and I think they had an average of around 10 marathons each or something like that, we didn't see any benefits.
Okay.
Now, part of this could be simply that it didn't work in that context. It doesn't work. But we also gave lower doses than what studies of cherry juice is given. So
okay.
We only ever gave beetroot juice post-exercise. We never gave it before exercise.
Okay.
And that was partly because of the way we had to design the research. Because research with beetroot juice has shown that if you consume it pre-exercise, it could help performance. We couldn't give it pre-exercise because otherwise it might mean they do more work and actually end up more damaged when we're giving it afterwards as well. So we couldn't do it for that reason. So in terms of whether it helps having it pre and post, we're not really sure.
Okay. So you, you couldn't load the system essentially like you could in the tart cherry juice on a research level. You could still individually, yeah. Somebody could if they wanted to try that with
definitely
themselves.
And I mean, we probably could actually if we were more clever about the way that we timed it. So if we had, say, a 7-day preload, as long as we didn't have it first thing in the morning, then perhaps as a way that we, you know, that's an idea for the future. I'll see. Yeah. I'll see what time I've got.
All right. As far as intake levels, and I don't know if we actually touched base on this on tart cherry juice, but what intake levels for tart cherry juice and beetroot juice is like, it has been studied and shown effective.
Yeah, so with tart cherries, the products are normally about, because it's in a concentrate. I remember you said you tried it, so it's quite concentrated and you normally mix it with water. There's yeah. different ones available, but that's the most common. And normally it's having a morning and an evening glass or however you're doing it, if it's a gel. And it's normally about 30 milliliters.
Okay.
Whereas the beetroot juice, it varies hugely depending on the product. So we have over here a product that is very concentrated. So you only have to have a small amount. You almost just have a shot of beetroot juice. You'll get the required amount, but then you can get big kind of cartons of beetroot where you'll have to have a lot more. So normally it depends on, I mean, from a recovery perspective, we didn't do too much dose response studies, if that makes sense. So we didn't say, look at 250 milligrams versus 500 versus 750. So yeah. We don't necessarily know the optimal amount. The amounts that we used were equivalent to around a 250 milliliter bottle, which was, I believe, about 400 milligrams of nitrate. Okay. So the optimal amounts for pre-exercise, which has been studied in a little bit more detail, is around 8 millimoles of nitrate, or again, around 400, 450 milligrams. And if you do get hold of any kind of beetroot supplements, if you take a look, then it should have the information about milligrams of nitrate or millimoles of nitrate.
Okay. And then for those that are used the ounce system, 30 milliliters is right around 1 ounce. 450 is right around that 15-16 ounce.
I forget about that. We don't use ounces at all here. So.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I had to look on my computer quick and was like, milliliters to ounces.
Did very well.
So, okay. So let's talk then. Is there any other thing that you want to touch on about post exercise with beetroot juice before we talk about the pre workout?
No, that I think yeah, what's interesting is that I recently tried to do a review looking at all the studies that I've looked at beetroot juice and recovery, and I think the first one I did was published in 2016.
Okay.
And I could only actually find one other research group that's looked at that, so beetroot juice and recovery. So it seems that not many people are doing that much research. So in terms of comparisons, there's probably 4 or 5 studies in beetroot juice and probably 20 in cherry juice. So at the moment, I think that with beetroot juice, we don't know quite enough. There's not enough massive data to tell us if it's really going to be a beneficial recovery aid or not.
Sure.
Whereas for performance, obviously, it's a different story.
Yeah. Okay. So the theory's there at least, but there needs to be more research on that. So let's talk about performance. And have you done any research on performance with beetroot juice, or have you just been looking at other people?
No, yeah, mostly other people. So I've tried to stay in my lane with recovery mostly.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I only know the performance nitrates from reading as opposed to actually doing the work myself.
Okay. So talk us through kind of what that research that you've been reading about performance and how is that affecting and what athletes and what kind of sports does it affect or not?
Yeah. So there's been lots and lots of studies on beetroot. And I think if you really wanted to know what benefits it might have in what sports, you can get hold of online some systematic reviews and meta-analysis. And essentially, all these studies do is they will group together all of the studies and give you a one kind of score at the end saying, does it affect it? Does it not affect it? So if you look at them, if you look online, you can often see, say, a list of 20 studies that have been done on a specific area.
Yeah.
And if we look at this data, it generally is always favorable. So across all the studies, it suggests beet juice does have a performance benefit, endurance. And I suppose when you nail it down, I think what people have started to do is actually look more specifically at what types of exercise it might benefit from. So there's not been too much in long duration stuff. That's what's quite interesting. So not many people have tried to look over an hour or 2 hours or things like that. There still needs to be a lot more research. And, and I think one thing that may help is perhaps multiple dosing as well. So little beetroot shots, having them on your bike or something like that, perhaps that might be beneficial. I mean, this is me kind of hypothesizing here.
Yeah.
I don't know research that's done it, but I think that's a possibility. Now, from a mechanistic point of view, so if we look at the mechanisms, how it'll work, it's shown that it might work better for short, high-intensity bursts of exercise.
Oh, interesting.
So this is partly to do with the fact that we think nitrate might preferentially help fast twitch fibers. So our fast twitch muscle fibers are what we often use when we're doing really high intensity explosive bursts of activity. So if we think of the types of exercise then it could be short sprint activity. So anything under say 10 minutes of sprint activity, it could be intermittent sprints as well. So looking again at team sports, so soccer, rugby, hockey, basket, it could be beneficial in these types of sports. There has been some work in cycling and running for events, you know, 10K, 16K, around that type of activity. There's also been some benefit shown for resistance exercises as well. And again, probably linking to explosive type activity. You know, if you're going to go perform bench press or squats or whatever it might be, this is all activities that B Reduce could theoretically help because it's using these fast twitch explosive muscle fibers, which it might help to benefit.
Okay, cool. That was more than I thought. I like coming from the endurance world, I was like, well, it's for endurance because the blood circulation is supposed to be better than that. But is this just like a one time thing, or are they like loading up 3 days before, or is it just directly before the performance or workout?
Yeah, it's a good question. And talking to Dr. Stephen Bailey, who I know you know, who's a real expert in this, I'm lucky enough to have as a colleague here in the UK. He talks about how what they found with a lot of the research is that if you give doses for, say, 5 or 6 days before, so you load up a little bit, it seems to have more of a beneficial effect than just if you have one single dose in the morning. So if you do tend to look at the research, it does seem to be that a few days loading before will be more beneficial.
That's cool. I always get excited when something is like, there's a lot of research in the positive direction. The next question is, beetroot juice is disgusting, which isn't really a question, but how on earth do you get athletes to take this?
You know, it's a really good question. So I find with athletes generally, they will consume, if they think, you know, if it's going to make them go faster, if that's what they think, then they'll consume anything, then they don't mind. Again, here in the UK, they do beetroot in shot form, which I believe is maybe 80 to 100 milliliters. So it's really concentrated, so you don't have to drink too much of it to get the effects. You can kind of just swill that down instead of having a drink, say, you know, a Gatorade-sized bottle of it. So that's probably something that really helps the athletes here anyway. But yeah, I think that is a big issue in terms of how can you get them to consume it. I mean, there is things like gels as well available. I think there's not been development enough maybe of other nitrate-rich being the main ingredient that might have benefits of nitrate-rich foods. So things like rhubarb is potentially rich, red spinach and red cabbage and things like this. The problem, again, is I think manufacturing vegetables into drinks and gels is quite a challenge compared to fruits. Other than convincing them that it will help them, it's hard to get people to have it, because I do agree, I'm not a huge fan of the taste myself.
Yeah, it used to be just like a compilation of a video of people taking beetroot juice shots and their expressions afterwards, because that would be that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely, that would be funny to watch.
Okay, so what about I've seen some companies come out with like beetroot juice in pill form, mm-hmm. Where it's supposed to be still bioavailable for you. Do you, I guess, has there been any research on the pill form? Or is that, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, not as far as I know, there's been research. And I think the big problem with the pill form is the volume that you'll need to get effects. Mm-hmm. So if you need, say, 400 milligrams of nitrate, that could be quite a lot of pills. So what I would advise to anyone looking at the pill form is to just check the concentrations and sure. seeing what it does, to cross-check whether it's actually those pills contain enough to actually give you the effects that you're looking
for. Okay. Okay. So to wrap up the beetroot juice, 400 milligrams to 450 are... milliliters or milligrams of
it should nitrate. Be of nitrate, yeah, so that's where it gets a little bit confusing with nitrate, because a lot of research reports it is millimoles, but again, millimoles is not something that the general public or athletes particularly want to know about. I don't want to know about it as a researcher. It's confusing to me, so yeah. You can convert that to milligrams based okay. on what the weight of nitrate is, and then that the milliliters or ounces, the drink, that can vary massively. It's yeah. more just about that nitrate concentration. So
yeah.
I would definitely make sure that you have a look at any product that you're having okay. and check that it's got those requisite amounts, which is, if they display it in milligrams, then hopefully anything above 400 milligrams is beneficial. If it's in millimoles, I don't know if they do, then 6 to 8 millimoles, I think, is supposed to be optimal.
Okay. Checking rules on some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I do hope, I know some do, I do hope whatever products are available in the US that they do have some kind of information like that, that you can even check online, and then yeah. hopefully some links to research about the amounts. Because I think that's one of the big problems at the moment with the beetroot, is that people are doing powders and tablets and things like that, but they're not thinking about the amounts that you need to have these effects, which yeah. as far as I know, you can only really get them in a drink form or a food form.
Okay. Yeah. I'd hate to have somebody go through the misery of drinking the, or something and not get the effects, because that would suck.
That would, yeah.
Okay. So as far as what Tom Clifford is up to these days, any other research on the docket for you, or what are you excited about when it comes to recovery in sports now?
Yeah. So recovery, I think there's still a long way to go. And I think one thing that needs to be done is the research needs to be a little bit stronger. So we need to do better research designs. We need to do more dietary controls during the exercise. We need to recruit elite athletes and things like that. So mm-hmm. I think there's still a lot of work to be done in the nutrition and recovery. And then one of the bigger ones that I'm hopefully going to look at a bit more in the next 2 years is some of the mechanisms. So when I described earlier about this theory that these polyphenol-rich beverages like cherry juice, they have mm. these nutrients that might actually improve our cellular defense, and this is what helps our recovery. I want to try and look in a bit more detail about that as well, because we can understand that more. We might be able to tailor what we're consuming a little bit better, because it could be that we're using cherry at the moment, but perhaps green tea is more beneficial. Curcumin's obviously quite big at the moment. Perhaps that's more beneficial as well. So if we can tease out some of these mechanisms, it's really important for how we're recovering. And I think one place that the research we let ourselves down a little bit at the moment is that when we do research on these recovery products, we always think of them independently. So you get into a lab, you do exercise, and we give you cherry juice or a placebo, which has essentially got nothing in it. But the reality is, if you're an athlete, then probably always have some kind of protein. So maybe in a shake, you might also have fish oils alongside it, various other supplements too, and then you might have food, etc. So really, we need to try and tease out that, do we need combinations? Is it going to be better? Are they better singly? Maybe some of them cancel each other out. We don't know. So I think there's still a lot of practical questions, I'd say, like this, that need to be answered and haven't been done in the research.
Yeah, that could be one of the reasons why elite athletes don't get as much benefit from tart cherry juice, because they already are taking something else or getting better sleep or taking care of their body a little bit more, that doesn't have as much of effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's another key aspect, is we don't know how if you have a diet that's really rich in fruits and vegetables, maybe that's sufficient. If you have a poor diet, particularly say younger individuals, or if you're someone who know you do not have a very good diet, how does that affect your recovery? Yeah. We don't quite know yet.
Okay. So if somebody, you know, listens to this interview and says, man, I need more Tom Clifford in my life. where can they follow you? Where can they, like, just keep up to date with your research and what you've got going on?
Yeah, for sure. So I work at Loughborough University in the UK. So not the easiest to spell or say. We get people call it all sorts of funny names if you're not from the UK. But if Loughborough University, if you type that into Google, then you should be able to find me on there. So Tom Clifford, if you type that in, I'm a lecturer there in physiology and nutrition. That my online profile as part of the university will have a link to all of my research. It's also got my contact details, so my email address, if you want to get in touch, will also be on there. I'm also on Twitter. I'm not hugely active, but I'm on there. I try and share anything interesting in the field, but also any research that I've done. So my handle's at TomClifford7, if anyone wants to take a look there as well.
Sounds good. And I'll have a link to your profile at Loughborough. Hey, dude.
See? It's kind of, not easy to do.
Yeah, well, it's spelled like Loughborough.
Yeah, we get that. Apparently someone said Luga Baruga before as well. So.
Luga Baruga.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
That's great. All right. Yeah. Well, I definitely appreciate your time. I know the listeners do as well. So tart cherry juice, beetroot juice. Now we know. We know the scoop from Tom Clifford. So thanks so much for being on the show, Tom.
No, thanks for having me, Jace. It's really enjoyable.
So... all right, episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's at jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food. Or email me directly at jace, J-A-S-E, at scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.